News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Big hour. Andy McCarthy at the bottom of the hour, talking about what's happening in New York with the with the indictment. It's going to be read out today at some point this morning of the first sitting mayor in New York history to be indicted, Mayor Eric Adams. Is he being railroaded? He certainly thinks so. We're going to get details shortly. Andy McCarthy will break down the significance of all that and who could replace him right now on the fly. People are talking about maybe Cuomo. Do you believe this? There'll be one of the most head-snapping comebacks ever. Brett Baer is standing by, and we have a big hour. We're also following the latest on the hurricane development that's about to slam Florida. Governor DeSantis on TV right now with the very latest. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The vibe I'm getting out of Israel is not in favor of a ceasefire. My sources in Israel are telling me that the right wing of the Netanyahu party is hard over on continuing the combat.
You know why? Because they can't get into the northern part of their country. Land invasion imminent. Israel going for the kill. And Biden is calling for a 21-day pause. No one is listening to each other. And no one is listening to the U.S. Why the IDF simply has to go for the complete victory for peace.
Number two.
First of all, people need to understand, most of what we know about what happened on July 13th comes from local law enforcement. Not the Secret Service, not the FBI. They're still being pretty opaque.
A little crazy, isn't it? Senator Ron Johnson. Today, we'll find out more questions as the Senate will talk about their investigation so far in the assassinations of Donald Trump. More head-spinning questions about what about the attack in Mar-a-Lago.
Number one.
Well, if you are hardworking, if you have the dreams and the ambitions and the aspirations of what I believe you do, you're in my plan.
Did that sound presidential to you? It sounds scary, ridiculous to me. Kamala speaks and talks the economy. We go over the painful exchange with Stephanie Ruhle of MSNBC and look at the polls. Brett Baer is chief political anchor for Fox News, anchor of Special Report, author of To Rescue the Constitution. He's also, his series continues on Fox Nation. Brett, welcome back. Your thoughts, first off, on Florida. It's about to be slammed by a hurricane. I know you got a place down there. You might even be there. Are you guys going to be okay?
Yeah, we're on the other side on Palm Beach. And, I think, listen, it looks a lot bigger than they thought it was going to look. And I think the warm water is really going to accelerate this thing. And, you know, you're talking Category 4. That's as big as we've seen. And into the Big Bend of Florida looks like that's where the eye is going. So, people have to get ready. Fortunately, you know, Florida has a lot of history, a lot of experience, and DeSantis has a machine down here. But it's still a massive hurricane.
It is. I want to talk about something you rolled in. I remember, I cannot believe it's been just a year ago when you were talking to the prince in Saudi Arabia. At the same time, Netanyahu watches your interview with the prince. And he says, I got to talk to you because it looks like peace with Saudi Arabia, recognizing each other's countries, was imminent. And it looked like the Abraham Accords, although they would have probably named it something different because of the bitterness between administrations, was about to expand. And then October 7th happened and changed everything. Can you believe it's just been a year since that interview?
It's amazing. I played a couple clips from it last night. And, you know, obviously MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, it had taken a long time to get him to sit down for that interview. And one of the topics I definitely wanted to hit on was Israel. And I asked, you know, there's news. And in fact, just the day before I sat down, there was a headline that said that the talks had fallen apart. And so that's how I phrased the question. I said, there's a story that the talks with Israel about normalization had fallen apart. And he said, no. And I said, so it's still going on? He's like, yes. And it's getting closer every day. And when we shut off the camera and did a walk and talk before we did, you know, back on camera again, he said, Brett, you have to understand, this is on the finish line. this is going to happen. It's going to change the face of the Middle East. And he went into, you know, how that's going to happen. So I get to the airport, and I get a satellite phone call, and it's the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, saying, I've seen this interview. You need to come interview me. So I changed our flights, went to the UN on the sidelines of the General Assembly, and I arrived. I landed at 8:30, sat down for the interview at 11:30, and that's the first question I asked him. And he said, in the words of a very smart man in the Middle East, we're getting closer every day, and it'll change the face of the Middle East. And, you know, only a few days later, it did change the face of the Middle East, because obviously Iran saw how close it was to being boxed out of all of that power and the change that was going to happen.
And as crazy as it's been and as costly as it's been to Hezbollah and Hamas in death and destruction, and of course to Israel with the tragedy of the unprovoked kill and capture of 200 plus, Iran's benefiting because they do not want everybody to unite and unify because they're left out and they have an exact opposite agenda. And their rivalry is with Saudi Arabia.
100%. And, you know, had that deal come across, Iran would have been out of the picture. And you know, it's interesting if you think about Biden administration policy and then before that Obama administration policy, how Iran was kind of lifted up as kind of the center of the Middle East equation, trying to get a nuclear deal, you know, how they were going to be the linchpin for making it all work. It seems like it's gone exactly opposite, and they are the toughest thorn in the side of peace throughout the Middle East with all the proxies that they are funding.
So what has happened to just fast forward to the actual battles. So it's pretty clear that Netanyahu said, Hezbollah is the problem. I can't have 80,000 people displaced from a country the size of New Jersey. It's just too much. And Hezbollah is not going to stop. So I am going to systematically, through their pagers, start to do damage to Hezbollah. And then through their surveillance and their intelligence, kill at least 8 of their leaders. Everybody close to Nasrallah, it seems, is dead. And they're bombing regularly. Somehow they got great intelligence. And when you see the secondary explosions, they're bombing a lot of their depots and rockets. And it looks as though Hezbollah is, to say the least, on their heels. So Joe Biden says he has this goal. Cut 32.
See, we put out a statement for 21-day ceasefire along the Israeli-Lebanese border. We're able to generate significant support from Europe as well as the Arab nations.
But the problem is they never include the objective and what it would mean for it to stop. Nobody wants anything destroyed or anyone to die. But the status quo doesn't work for Israel. They can't get people back in their homes safely as long as Hezbollah doesn't stop. And the only way they can do it is to escalate in order to de-escalate. They never seem to acknowledge the issue. They just want a ceasefire, and to me, it leads me to political purposes. Well, ask yourself, why are they doing this? Israel did not want this.
Yeah. Listen, none of the talk about ceasefire includes the thousands and thousands of rockets fired from Hezbollah into Israel before that, and the fact that they've had to, you know, get out of that area completely, and families, you know, kids not going to school, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously Israel's having some success. That crazy operation about the pagers and the radios that, you know, takes down all these people and makes their head spin about the possibility that they're being targeted and then actually being targeted. And so, yeah, Hezbollah is starting to be dismantled, and clearly Israel is having a lot of success. It requires an expansion, which they don't talk about inside the Biden administration.
So on the assassination investigation, it's pretty clear Donald Trump was briefed specifically about the danger, Iran. They absolutely want to kill him. They're absolutely in operations to do it. And there's really no response from the administration. So Donald Trump brought this up on the stump yesterday. Listen to what he was saying. Cut 25.
And in the second case, the assassin had 6 cell phones in his car, yet the FBI has likewise been unable to penetrate their guard. Shouldn't be tough to do. They want to know, and I want to know, and the whole country and maybe the world wants to know, who is he calling? Who is he calling? In the old days, the FBI and the DOJ used to capture people before anything happened. In current days, the upper echelon of the FBI is all talk while they focus on the sitting president's political opponents. That's what they're doing.
Then he went on to say this, cut 24.
But if I were the president, I would inform the threatening country, in this case Iran, that if you do anything to harm this person, we are going to blow your largest cities and the country itself to smithereens. We're going to blow it to smithereens. You can't do that.
But there really has been nobody watching the, you know, a couple of nice phone calls. No one watching the president's back. No one watching that the campaign is still, to this day, still being hacked by Iran. Information leaked to different outlets, to different media outlets, and to the other side. Why is that?
It's bizarre. I think it's bizarre that there hasn't been more attention to it. It's kind of bizarre that it hasn't been talked about. I don't know what the back channels are or what's been signaled, but there's no indication that the Biden administration has done, you know, some kind of warning to Iran. And remember, they have been not only this plot to kill Trump, but you've got Mike Pompeo,
Robert O'Brien,
John Bolton. They have security nonstop, and they've had, you know, plots against them. How is that possible that we accept that as okay, and nobody says anything? And then, you know, you get hacked. The Trump campaign gets hacked, and then the information gets to the Biden campaign, now the Harris campaign. I don't know. I think there is a point here, and I think that's why the former president is bringing it up, that people say, wait a second, that's just not acceptable, no matter who you are.
I know it is. So where do you get the sense these polls are? I watched the Marist poll. North Carolina tie's got to be worrying to the Republicans, to Trump, rather. And then you have he's got a 1-point lead in Arizona, 1-point lead in Georgia. I haven't seen the latest polls in Pennsylvania. They seem to be real tight. Where do you sense the momentum is?
I think it's really a back and forth thing. I think there's enthusiasm on the Harris side, but I think that she hasn't closed the deal, which is why, you know, they're looking for other avenues to do that. I think she has some problems in the Sun Belt. States, you know, Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, but maybe is shoring up in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. But every day we see a new poll that changes that whole scenario. I mean, you can't really say there's a trend. Today, Fox comes out with new statewide polls. I think we have Arizona and Georgia today at 6 p.m. That we'll be able to put out. And as we get closer, the likely voters in those swing states are the ones that everybody should be paying attention to. You know, these national polls that do registered voters, you should kind of take them off the table, because right now you need to be in the likely voters, and really the focus should be on those 7 states.
And we'll see what the strategy is. We got a vice presidential debate, and that should be it, I think. Have you heard indications from either side that they're thinking about a Fox debate?
You know, listen, what I said the other day to Hugh Hewitt was, he asked me, what did I think? And I said, I think if former President Trump pushed the issue, that the Harris people would come around to a Fox debate because of how much they want a debate. And it was, of course, reported differently of what I said. But that's, I think, the case. Right now, I don't sense that there is any want or need on the Trump side to do another debate. I am sure he's going to do other things. We're hoping to do a town hall, at least, with both of them someplace in a swing state. And, you know, trying to go down that road.
All right. Go get him, Brett. It's going to be a big day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay. See you.
1-866-408-7669. I'm going to be able to take some of your calls, whether you're in the eye of the storm, literally. Yeah, I want to weigh in on what's happening with New York and their mayor. Do you think he's being targeted like Trump was by this same city that's trying to take Trump's money and his freedom? We'll talk about that. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Because what's crazy is that Donald Trump gets so much credit and has for the last 9 years of the fact that, you know, people have access to him and he says what he thinks and he just lets it rip. But much of what he says either doesn't make sense or it's not true. Yes. She actually was perfectly reasonable.
So she's trying to justify the non-answers to questions in that Stephanie Ruhle, who made her, and I'll play this later in this hour. You know exactly why Stephanie Ruhle got this interview. It's what she said on Bill Maher over the weekend. Because she's on with Brett Stevens. He's a conservative columnist, nice guy, but hates Trump. Like Chris Christie hates Trump. Well, you know, just will not deal with him. I don't care what he says, what he does. He shouldn't be president. So she just says to Brett Stevens, why are you judging her? She's whatever. She's got to flesh some things out. Donald Trump is the alternative. You got to vote for her. Next thing you know, she's got the interview on Wednesday. Totally related. So she wasn't being judged. She wasn't judging her. He was trying to make her look good. And if that's your goal, your goal. But she admits she was not giving answers. I'm going to play this a little bit later. But I want to talk when we come back a little bit about what's going on with the mayor and these indictments with Andy McCarthy. But she was asked, the $25,000 tax credit to anyone the first time high buyer. You have $6,000 tax credit for every kid, or $8,000 for every kid that's born, newborn, that's $6,000. So you're spending all this money. You're going to get $50,000 for people to start their own business. Who's paying for it? And all you hear is a long pause. And she says, corporate taxes. I'm going to raise the corporate taxes. What if you don't get the Senate? Total pause again. Because she has no idea. What if you don't get the Senate? Because Trump tax cuts are about to expire. So just know that if a Democrat becomes president and you let him expire, that's a tax increase. And for the last time, because Donald Trump's a billionaire, it doesn't mean his tax reform was for billionaires. It's easy to do that if you're not paying attention, but you people do. And for your next time you go to a tailgate this weekend or go out to dinner Friday night, not Saturday, One Nation's on, you're not going to go anywhere. Just know that you just say the people that experienced the greatest tax discount, the tax decrease, they kept more of their money, is the middle class from the tax reform. And the corporate taxes brought companies back here, because then you can compete with the Irelands and the China and the EU. Because our corporate tax rate was 35%, he dropped it to 21%. She's going to rocket it up again.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If I am charged, many may say I should resign because I cannot manage the city while fighting the case. I can also understand how everyday New Yorkers would be concerned that I cannot do my job while I face accusation. But I have been facing these lies for months since I began to speak out for all of you. And their investigation started, yet the city has continued to improve. Make no mistake, you elected me to lead this city, and lead it I will.
And he still, despite being indicted and the first sitting mayor of New York City ever to be indicted, he's going to stay on the job. We don't know the details of the indictment, but we know this. If he does step aside, the person that would step up is the advocate, and it would be Jumaane Williams. And he will step up, and he's got to call a election within 30 days. And within 30 days, at which time you could just jump in, Republican, Democrat, it's going to be just one vote. There's no primary to do it. And then whenever his term was up, the term was up. I think it's in two more years. But it's unbelievable what they've done. They've basically told his New York schools chancellor, you better quit. He did. The health commissioner, out. His chief counsel resigned. NYPD commissioner Edward Caban, in the middle of an investigation, he resigned. They took the phones of almost all his aides to build up more evidence. And one of the things they're going to charge him, the mayor, and that is being an unregistered foreign agent. And we know one of the countries is Turkey. So how much trouble is he in? And why is this so unprecedented? And what do you think could be in that indictment? Andy McCarthy, former U.S. Assistant Attorney for the Southern District of New York. Andy, could you put in perspective for people listening around the country how unique this is?
Well, it's never happened in history. We've had a lot of very colorful figures inhabit the position of mayor of New York City, famously called the second hardest job in the world, and not for no reason. But none of them's ever been indicted. Jimmy Walker, back in the earlier part of the 20th century, was embroiled in scandal, but not indicted. There was a lot of scandal around Ed Koch's final years as mayor, but he, I don't think personally, was implicated in the bad stuff. But there was a lot of, I was a young federal prosecutor in Manhattan at the time, and we had you may remember, there was a parking violation bureau scandal, and Rudy Giuliani ended up personally
Donald Manus.
In court.
Remember Donald Manus?
Yeah, Donald Manus, and Rudy personally prosecuted Stanley Friedman, who was the Bronx borough president. So it was a interesting time, but the mayor, Koch, did not get charged. Here, Brian, it looks to me like this has been going on for over a year, and it seems to me they've taken very aggressive investigative steps, including doing a search warrant personally on Mayor Adams back in November of last year. So, just so your listeners understand, to get a search warrant, you have to show a judge probable cause that crimes have been committed and evidence of the crime will be found in the place that you want to search. So they had to have that in order to get a federal judge to give a search warrant, which of course a judge you would expect is going to scrutinize very carefully before you sign a search warrant for a sitting mayor of New York City. On the other hand, I think if this was an investigation that was going on, say, with respect to a member of Congress, you'd have people in Congress raising holy hell because of separation of powers concerns. That happens every time there's an investigation of someone in Congress. Here, it doesn't seem like people are too whipped up by the idea that the federal government is, not only conducting an investigation of the sitting chief executive of the most important, biggest city in the United States. They're not just doing an investigation. They're tossing his house. They were at Gracie Mansion at 6 o'clock this morning, tossing Gracie Mansion, doing personal searches on him as he comes out of events. So I don't want to get whipped up about it because, as you say, we haven't seen the charges yet. We're supposed to see them sometime today. But to me, this is a very, in terms of a federalist perspective, it's alarming that the federal government does that. But as somebody like you who watches and is interested in the politics of all this stuff, I think the internecine Democratic politics nationally and in New York are very interested. And for someone like me, who is a lot more concerned about the border crisis and illegal immigration in New York than I am particularly concerned about Mayor Adams, I have to say it's watching this will be interesting because they're going to try to make their case on whatever corruption they say he's involved in with Turkey. And it looks like his defense is going to be they're going after me because I've been tough on the Biden administration's irresponsible approach to border security. And from my perspective, the more attention there is paid to the irresponsible Biden-Harris policies on border security, the better.
Right, especially if you're Donald Trump. Yeah, let's bring this up again. Very similar type of harassment, number one. And number two, why did it happen? Well, some speculate that because he came out and said, look, this whole crisis is costing New York City $5.5 billion. By 2026, it'll cost $12 billion. You've asked us to take care of 250,000 illegal immigrants. 70,000 are still here. And when after he met with the feds, he wrote, "Help is not on the way." He said he was baffled that he was not getting any at least aid and that this is continuing the way it is. Next thing you know, he's told not to help out on the Biden reelection. Biden reelection goes by the wayside, and he becomes isolated in the Democratic Party, and this investigation starts. Now, they say six countries are involved, and China, Uzbekistan is two, and right. There's some obscure countries, and Turkey's the other, and let's see, it's South Korea.
South Korea, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, if he's out soliciting money from these countries for favors in New York City, all right, that would be alarming. But if he's out there helping the Turkish embassy move and expediting fire marshal code restrictions and cutting through red tape that may be bending the rules, and I'm saying that's why you took down a city, basically the entire his entire staff has been forced to resign, their phones being taken. I don't know how they communicate. What do they have, string in a cup? So here's AOC.
You have to ask Hezbollah. I don't know.
Absolutely. That's what they're using, carrier pigeons. So here's AOC before the indictment. Look at this. Cut 42.
"We are seeing just such a steady stream from deputy mayors and so many others that are either vacating, resigning, or frankly leaving the city rudderless in terms of leadership. The DOE commissioner just resigned 2 weeks into the school year. And so right now, I think this is squarely about Mayor Adams' ability to govern New York City and for the New York City governance to be fully staffed to serve the people of New York City."
So to help it be fully staffed, let's get someone else to resign. So she called her a do-nothing congresswoman, a no-show congresswoman. So I hate these family fights, but it's happening. So Andy, what has to be in that indictment to rise to this type of public investigation and humiliation?
Well, it'll be interesting, Brian, because I'd say two things that we should be looking for. One is the Supreme Court has made it very hard to bring a public corruption case. They've really tightly construed the statutes. It's not surprising that the statutes are hard to enforce because the people who wrote the statutes are the people who get investigated under them. So it's funny how that works, right? But they have a lot of sort of escape hatches in them. So these cases are not easy to bring, which is why I think you've seen, at least in the coverage I've seen so far, all this concentration on things like straw donors to campaigns, because those are the easier cases to prove. You know, you get a foreign source who wants to give a guy money and, you know, politician money, can't do it because of the limitations in the campaign finance laws, both at the state and the federal level. So what they do is they give a bunch of money to a bunch of people who are allowed to give, and those people pretend that the contributions are from them rather than the foreign source. That's a pretty common scheme, and it's one that's fairly easy to prove. When I see that there's all the attention to that, I sort of scratch my head and say, you know, where were the Clintons and the Bidens to help Adams out here, right? Why didn't Adams just set up the Adams Foundation, right? Or have his son set up a consultancy, you know, because there's ways that Democrats have figured out that are ingenious to get lots of money from foreign sources. But apparently they're going to nail him on, or they're going to try on this straw donor thing. Then the other thing I would ask is, you know, the Biden-Harris Justice Department had a slam dunk FARA case, that's foreign agent, the failure to register as a foreign agent, which apparently is one of the charges they're thinking about bringing against Adams. They had a slam dunk case on Hunter Biden for being a foreign agent of Ukraine and a foreign agent of Romania.
Romania, yeah. Could it be China?
Somehow that case didn't get brought. And at the same time, you know, you have Adams, and he may be as dirty as the day is long. I have no idea. He may have done things he shouldn't have done. But at the same time, the mayor in New York City, which is the capital of commerce in the world, it's a pretty common thing for the mayor to you know, go out and try to attract business to New York and have commercial relationships with other companies. Now, obviously, that's not supposed to be personal enrichment. It's supposed to be like for the city. But I think you're, until we see the charges, you're in kind of a gray area if you're talking about, like, Adams did stuff to get the Turks to have, you know, mutually enriching business with New York. And he's going to get nailed for being a foreign agent in that connection. I don't know. I'll be very curious to see exactly what the charges are. And obviously, if he was lining his own pockets rather than doing his best for the city, that's going to be something that's very serious. But I just think it's very arbitrary to me how especially Democratic administrations enforce the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Seems to me that, like, right. charges get brought against Manafort, maybe they get brought against Adams, but somehow they never get brought against, you know,
Hunter
Biden and the Clinton political consultants that he brought in to help him with Ukraine and other countries. You know, those people somehow don't get charged.
Hey, meanwhile, on the Trump train, the New York Appeals Court on Thursday, today, is going to hear arguments on Trump's $454 million civil fraud judgment. So it's gone up to the New York Appeals Court. President Trump will not be there. The hearing will start. How many days will it last? What is the appeal from the defense side? What is his perspective? What should be included in the reasoning on that? This is the E. Jean Carroll verdict, right?
There's two different cases. The 450.
That's just a fine. Yeah, that's the fraud. That's fraud.
That's the New York fraud case that was brought by Letitia James.
Yeah.
And, when we're talking about the appeal, as far as that's concerned, I've always thought the state law element that should be brought there is that they took a consumer protection statute and applied it for the first time ever to transactions that were arm's length transactions between sophisticated financial actors. So in other words, they took a statute that doesn't belong in this context and applied it to Trump, and then came up with a $450 million fraud penalty in a case where there's no fraud. There's not a single fraud victim. And where Trump's statements of personal financial condition, yeah. no matter what you think of them, have a disclaimer in there telling the other side, you know, do your own due diligence.
Gotcha.
And we know they not only did their own due diligence, they said that they would do business with Trump again. And then I guess U.S. constitutional perspective, what I would say is that the punishment here, even if there was a wrong done, the punishment is so out of whack compared to what right. it is that Trump did wrong yeah, here. That should be an Eighth Amendment problem.
All right. Thanks so much. You're always great. Andy, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
And after the indictment comes down, I'll call you again. Ainsley Earhart up here talking about her interview with Melania Trump next.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm just stunned about what's happening in New York. Also watching, keeping an eye on the investigation, House investigation into the assassination attempt in Butler of President Trump. What's stunning to me that came out yesterday that I didn't know, and I got to get through the whole report, was that do you know that the Secret Service snipers were not the one necessarily that killed the assailant? The would-be assassin. Do you know that some of the shooting came from the police snipers, the local police, state troopers? So they might have killed him. I have not gotten a good answer into how the 20-year-old would-be assassin who killed Corey Compentor, I have not gotten a good answer on why they needed to quickly cremate the body. As was pointed out today, when the Uvalde killing happened, we got all the answers caught on tape. We already saw what happened. They kept that body of the dead of the shooter for a week or two. I mean, we don't have anything right now. So that's a little stunning. And what we're seeing correctly right now is local police being asked to testify. Also, somebody else testifying is a local a Secret Service agent that did it for 25 years and served in the FBI prior to that. And they got local police. And the first thing he said is, was not responsible for the rooftop, was not responsible or in contact with the sniper team, was not responsible for anything that was on the ground. So they better get it right, because guess what? The president's coming back to Butler again tomorrow. With me right now is Ainsley Earhart. We've got a couple of minutes with Ainsley. Ainsley, you had your big interview yesterday. You got a special Sunday at 10 o'clock.
That's exactly right. Yes. So we went to Trump Tower. We sat down with Melania yesterday and for about an hour. And then we had, sorry, I'm out of breath. I just ran up here from doing some recordings for the special on Sunday. So yeah, specials on Sunday. And that's going to be a longer in-depth piece about not only including all the sound bites from our interview, but also we asked our viewers to ask questions and to send in questions. So I have some of those.
So wait, in addition, or you asked some viewer questions?
We asked viewer questions. We interviewed her at the end of the interview with her yesterday. I said some of our viewers send in questions. Yeah. And these are the four that I asked her. I said, what surprised you about living in the White House? Which room is your favorite? That was from Jill in North Carolina. Mary in Florida, what would you have done differently as First Lady? Number three was Sasha in Georgia. What's your favorite place that you visited while being First Lady? And then this one was the last question of the interview, and I loved her response. This is from Shannon in Maine. If you could meet and tell your 16-year-old self anything, what would you tell her and why?
Wow. So get out of Slovenia?
We didn't include any of those answers so that we would have some new, fresh material for Sunday.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah.
So do you have enough for a whole Sunday show? Or
we do.
You're going to get a band or do dancing?
So we're weaving in some of the events that she talked about. For instance, she talked about watching on election night when he won in 2016. She was watching Fox News. Mm-hmm. And she said, I remember when Bret Baier said the winner of this election is Donald J. Trump. And she looked at Donald Trump and he said, can you believe this, Melania? And she said, yes, I actually can.
Now, does she think he's going to win?
She does,
right.
Of course. Yeah,
she was right the first time.
She was, and I said, "Do you support this? Do you want to do this again? Because you have y'all have been through the ringer." And she said, "I support my husband. He really wants to do this."
Thanks, Ainsley.
Thank you.
At 10.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Glad you're here, everyone. Big, big show coming your way. A lot of is going to be packed in. Seth Barron's going to be with us. If anybody knows about what's happening in New York, he's a columnist and author, and he's been focused maybe the last 25 years on New York politics. As we know, the sitting mayor is being indicted for the first time in American history in New York City. Though you could argue it's certainly the biggest and maybe the most important city in the country, which would mean the world. Josh Krasauer, Inside Politics, and Mark Thiessen on All Things That Matter with the Washington Post, Fox News contributor, former speechwriter for Bush. We're also watching right now the hearings, the House hearings on the investigation into the first assassination attempt on Donald Trump. So with all that, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The vibe I'm getting out of Israel is not in favor of a ceasefire. My sources in Israel are telling me that the right wing of the Netanyahu party is hard over on continuing the combat.
It sounds like the great admiral is not for that. Land invasion imminent. Israel going for the kill to wipe out Hezbollah. Biden's calling for a 21-day pause. Nobody's listening to Joe Biden. Why the IDF simply has to go for the complete win. An escalation to de-escalation is it.
Number two.
First of all, people need to understand most of what we know about what happened on July 13th comes from local law enforcement, not the Secret Service, not the FBI. They're still being pretty opaque.
Right. And that is not acceptable, Senator Ron Johnson. Assassination attempt investigation. More questions than ever about the Butler attempt in July and head spinning questions about the attack in Mar-a-Lago that almost came off.
Number one.
Well, if you are hardworking, if you have the dreams and the ambitions and the aspirations of what I believe you do, you're in my plan.
Is that the next president of the United States? Help me. She speaks about the economy, does Kamala, the vice president. We go over the painful exchange with Stephanie Ruhle and then look at the polls. Mark Thiessen, so much going on, so much unprecedented. I want to start in the politics of it. Marist poll out. North Carolina tied. No, governor, the scandal around the Republican governor nominee is certainly not helping. 1 point lead for Trump in Arizona, 1 point lead for him in Georgia, and overall, they're neck and neck. Your thoughts about the state of the race?
It is a, it's a dead heat. I mean, it's just, it's going to come down to, like 2020 did, the tens of thousands of votes in a handful of swing states. And Donald Trump needs to spend the next 6 weeks convincing those that 5% or so of undecided swing voters in these swing states to trust him with the presidency again. They most of these voters know that they were better off under Donald Trump's presidency than they are under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, but there's a reason why they're still undecided. You know, they're not sure about Donald Trump. They're not sure about his temperament. They're not sure about his character. There's a New York Times poll that just came out that shows that, you know, they actually polled these undecided, these small number of undecided swing voters, and 35% said that it was an issue of temperament that was keeping them undecided. He's got to convince them to come over to his side. And it's not just by saying your life was better under me. It's they have to be convinced that they feel comfortable with him in the Oval Office. And look, she's a disaster. I mean, that interview, you know, basically she's been asked multiple times, specifically, how are you going to bring down inflation and what are you going to do for my family? And she talks about her lawn. She talks about growing up middle class, and now she's talking about holistic approaches. She can't answer the freaking question of what will you do on day one. This is, you know, it reminds me of when Michael Dukakis in that Saturday Night Live skit, when Michael Dukakis was standing next to Dana Carvey playing George H.W. Bush, and Bush was saying,
"John Lovitz,
the light," you know, blah blah blah, and he said, "I can't believe I'm losing to this guy."
Yeah, John Lovitz was playing.
You know, truly, like, you know, if Donald Trump loses to this person, it's a shock. Like, she's incompetent. He should be able to crush her.
It's going to kill me to do this, but I want people to listen to a little of it. And what her answer is to a very direct question. Cut six.
I want to understand, when the Teamsters decided not to endorse you, what was their reasoning? What are they looking for?
Well, let me go back to our just previous conversation. I'm very proud to have the endorsement of the steelworkers in almost every other major union in America, because I stand by workers, and I stand by the importance of being able to join a union and to understand the benefit and the value of unions. And I understand the importance of investing in new industries and working actively with the private sector to grow our economy.
But I'm asking because there's this idea, we want something more from her. What is it?
Well, here's the thing, that back to your point about previous election cycles, Donald Trump made a whole lot of promises that he did not meet, and one would argue broke. Look at Lordstown. He said he was going to...
I can't do it anymore. I'm just... Do you see this? She's running in a parallel universe. That was, to me, the best example. Just tell them what the Teamsters are missing. Whatever. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons you didn't even invite them to the DNC, and nobody... 67%... Her question should have been 67% of the people surveyed in the Teamsters want Trump over you.
No, it's exactly right. I mean, look,
where's her answer?
She doesn't have an answer because she's an empty vessel. This is the dumbest person ever to run for president to be a major party nominee, and she's completely untested. Normally you have to go through a lot to get a major party nomination. You have to run in a primary and beat 20 other people in your party by proving that you're the best candidate. You have to, you know, go through this series of primary debates where you've had to figure out your agenda and answer questions and come up with ways to argue it and lay out a platform like she did in 2019, which, by the way, everyone wants to brush under the rug what her 2019 platform was, because she's not running on that anymore. You have to do town halls with voters in New Hampshire and Iowa, answering their questions. She didn't do any of that.
Right.
And so she is completely unprepared to be the candidate.
Yeah, we lost you there, but usually you get you back in location.
I mean, are they under?
Yeah. Mark, you're breaking up a little bit, but I want you to hear from another Mark. Here's Mark Cuban. So Mark Cuban just hates Trump, too, and does not want him to be president. could not support Joe Biden, but was ready to. But now he's all in for Kamala Harris. He knows better. This guy can pick out who's smart, who gets in, who doesn't, better than anybody else. This is why I don't think he's being sincere here. Listen to what he said to Neil. Cut 11.
I think she's thorough. If you look at Donald, right, when he talks about his policies, they're very impetuous. They're impulsive. They're, you know, set to match whatever's happening at a rally. Whereas with the Harris campaign and Kamala herself, she's very, very thorough. She's very precise. Her team really vets every idea. And to me, that's important as a business person because you can trust what she says.
Are you insane? She was the one who said, let's tax unrealized capital gains. Unrealized gains on taxes that might have a value, but they're not cash. Are you shocked that Mark Cuban is that in bed with Kamala Harris or not to let Donald Trump win?
So if Kamala Harris was a contestant on Shark Tank and came in and gave the presentation that she gave in that MSNBC interview, Mark Cuban would have raked her over the coals and said, I'm out.
Great example. Absolutely.
I mean, truly, you know, it's absolutely absurd.
So when you
no investors, she would have gone out of that with her tail between her legs and would have been doing an interview in the hallway about why none of the sharks made her an offer.
All right. I want you to hear. I want to pivot, if I can, to the assassination investigation. Senator Ron Johnson, first off, why they incinerated the body and we can't even see an autopsy to find out what bullet hit him and killed the assassin. We can't open up his phone still, too. Trump let us know that yesterday. Encrypted apps that we can't open at the highest level of government. A 20-year-old loser from Pennsylvania has managed to stump the CIA and FBI and the DNI. Senator Ron Johnson yesterday, cut 28.
First of all, people need to understand most of what we know about what happened on July 13th comes from local law enforcement. Not the Secret Service, not the FBI. They're still being pretty opaque. I think what stands out to me, I mean, you mentioned the one thing. We had one sniper that we interviewed. He was on the team that had an obstructed view. They couldn't see crooks. There was a tree in front of him. Both those snipers apparently believe a bullet went between them. You can hear the whiz crack from the bullet. So that opens up all kinds of questions.
Do you hear what he just said? A bullet went between the Secret Service snipers. Who's shooting at him? If he can't see the shooter, could the shooter see them? And all of a sudden he picks up, instead of shooting at the stage, he decides to shoot the snipers? Does that make you think?
The whole thing makes me think. But look, here's the fundamental thing we need to put this in the broader perspective. Who is in charge of the Secret Service? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
This is an executive branch
Mayorkas
agency, right? Are you surprised that the same administration that gave us the worst border crisis in American history, the worst inflation in 40 years, the worst crime wave since the 1990s, the worst foreign policy debacle in American history, in modern American history in Afghanistan, also gave us the worst Secret Service failure in the history of our country there was no Secret Service when Abraham Lincoln was president. But I mean, this is their responsibility. And this is happening at a time when there is an active Iranian threat against the president of the United States. Iran is a terrorist regime that killed more until 9/11 had killed more Americans than any terror network in the history in the world. And they weren't able to stop a deranged 20-year-old kid from shooting the former president of the United States. If they can't stop a 20-year-old kid, how are they going to stop a highly trained Iranian terrorist operative?
And we don't even know anything about this kid still. We don't have someone to say he was a crazy kid next door. He was a normal kid. He was a locked up kid. The parents were nuts. The parents are great. We don't know anything. It doesn't seem like anyone's curious. And as the president brought up, and I'll paraphrase, I don't want to take time away from you. He came out yesterday and said, if I found out that Iran was threatening an American leader, I would say I'm going to pick your biggest city and I'll cut it. I'll blow it up to smithereens. But we don't get anything from Joe Biden except an appearance on The View where he basically says he's still a threat to democracy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's your show, so you can take all the time you want. Number two, this is Donald Trump's theory of foreign policy. It's escalation dominance. So the Biden administration is driven by escalation terror, right? They're terrified to go even a rung up the escalation ladder. What Donald Trump would do was say, tell our adversaries, I'm going to the top of the escalation ladder. Want to come with me? And they would say, no, thank you. And they would scale back down while he opened it up path of negotiation. And that's why Russia didn't invade Ukraine on his watch. Iran didn't attack Israel when they were firing on our troops in the Middle East. He took out Qasem Soleimani and said, Iran is next if you retaliate, and they back down. That's how our adversaries only understand force. And right now, our troops are being fired at constantly across the Middle East, and there's no – with impunity. There's no punishment. There's no cost imposed on it. And so, you're definitely right. They're going to try and take out Donald Trump. He should tell them, if you take out Donald Trump, I'm going to take out the Ayatollah Khamenei. That should be the answer.
I would love it.
Donald Trump – if a hair on Donald Trump's head is harmed, the Ayatollah Khamenei is dead. Send that message through diplomatic channels, and they will stop in a heartbeat because they know the United States can do it.
And I want – you know what Trump should say? If you ever threatened Obama and I was president, that's what I would say too.
Amen. He would.
Yep. And lastly this. I am firmly in the belief that it's in America's interest for Ukraine to be successful. I firmly believe that China's watching to see if they eventually – if Russia eventually wins, they will definitely eventually take Taiwan. I'm all for that. But what Zelensky did, flying on a U.S. plane into Scranton with a Democratic governor while ripping J.D. Vance and putting down President Trump as naive, is something I can never back. And I thought he was smarter than that. He just made things so much harder for people like me and you to go to bat for Ukraine. And for the most part, Zelensky, when he does something that's so political, that is almost election interference, like that idiot mayor from London.
Yeah, no, it's indefensible what he did. To some extent, the comments he made are indefensible, and it was the combination of the comments and the visit that did it. It should have been bipartisan. There should have been Republicans there. Look, the idea of going to a plant and thanking the American people and thanking American workers for producing weapons to Ukraine is a good thing. But doing it in a way that is only Democrats there and in a key swing state, 6 weeks before an election, very, very bad judgment. And I think to some extent he was duped by the Democrats because this was organized by the Pentagon, by the Biden administration. They're the ones who organized the trip. He should have asked, well, who are the Republicans are going to be there? Is this going to be bipartisan? And they didn't do that. And that's just a disaster.
Just so you know, the Ukrainian ambassador says she set it up. So that's why Senator Ron Johnson says she should be fired. But a couple other things. I don't actually like the symbolism because Russia wants to label this NATO against Russia. And we know we're supplying the weapons. You know we're supplying the weapons. The world knows. But why reinforce it and have a governor sign a missile and let everybody know America, it's America, or let everybody think it's America against Russia? Why give Russia something to talk about? We got a minute. We have 30 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with that. I think that going to – what he should have done is he should have gone to the 155-millimeter base in Ryan Fitzpatrick's district instead of the one in the Democratic district and been there with Republicans as well as Democrats. But look, the reality is most of the aid going to Ukraine is actually going to American workers who are churning out these weapons for them. And going to thank those workers for what they're doing to save his country is not a bad instinct. It was just poorly executed.
There's a Zoom. You could use Zoom. Mark Thiessen, thanking people for working hard is always great. Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right. Hopefully, America's a better place having been on our show. Josh Krasshauer at the bottom of the hour, and I see the lines filling up 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There's some things she's not giving you a direct answer on because she's a politician.
Right.
But I agree with you that getting a chance to speak to her, getting to the American people to hear from her more, right? What do you do with the fact, if you're her campaign, when people hear over and over, I don't really know what her policies are, and they can say, well, look, we have this book and it has 82 pages. I guarantee there are people who watched tonight who went, oh, taxes only increase if you make over 400 grand because there's all sorts of people like, well, my tax cut's going to run out. Maybe my taxes are going to go up next year. They're not really reading the 82-page plan. And so I think the more, and she doesn't necessarily have to do with us, the more she sits down. I mean,
She's a great interview. I sat down with her for 25 minutes.
Yeah, go talk.
You might not have liked all of her answers, but she had one for every single question.
Not really. Not the question you asked. Debbie, listening in New York on WABC. Hey, Debbie.
Hi, Brian. So Biden campaigned as being the unifier, being middle of the road.
How'd that go?
And then he got in and he did the exact opposite. So is changing her tune on all her leftists and trying to become the middle. She's going to walk in there and do the same thing that Biden did. So why isn't the Trump campaign using that as a tactic to tell you believed Biden and look what happened? Now you're going to believe Kamala and the same thing is going to happen.
Debbie, what I'm going to do is play a soundbite from Joe Biden on The View. And he is going to tie her to every one of his policies. And then we'll know. They're forever tied, unless Joe Biden's a liar. She doesn't think he's a liar. He's going to be tied to everything that they did.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There are three good reasons for Trump folks to be happy right now. Number one, that Gallup poll that Joe mentioned earlier. Number two, the fact that overall in the Real Clear Politics averages both nationally and in the individual battleground states, Trump is running ahead of where he was at this point in 16 or 20. And then the last thing is you're seeing a trending up in these national polls as well. What I see as a problem for them is, one, I don't think they have a big enough digital presence right now. The Democrats are really beating them big time in that area. And two, I think in terms of the enthusiasm gap, there's still a little bit of a gap.
Interesting, because I see the crazy Trump crowds. I witnessed them firsthand, saw the thousands lined up in North Carolina on the outside, let alone the 2,500 on the inside. But that's Matt Towery, a pollster, works for Gallup, does some other things. They also run with the Trafalgar guys. They also say Trump's got to do a better job hooking up with the traditional Republicans. And he's got to get Brian Kemp personally involved in Georgia. He's using his team, but he is not there. With us right now is Josh Krasshour, Fox News Radio political analyst, and you see him all over the channel. Josh, your thoughts about what Matt said?
I think the analysis is pretty spot on. And if anything, I think this last week has been a good one for Donald Trump's campaign. One thing that's really interesting about the Harris trajectory is that she has these moments of sugar highs, extended moment during the convention and when she was anointed as the nominee. But then there's a moment where I think voters realize there's not a whole lot of substance behind the hype. And then her numbers kind of trickle back down to sort of where the Democrats have been, you know, normally. And then you saw this again with the debate performance. You got probably about a point or so bump from a strong debate performance. But as she hasn't done interviews and she gives the, you know, we saw it again last night with this very substance-free, not a lot of meat on the bones interview on MSNBC, pretty soft interview, and she really didn't show much policy chops. I think people are coming to realize that there's not a lot of meat behind the bone, or there's not a lot of substance there. So, you know, I think this is a very close race, and if anything, Trump seems to have a slight bit of momentum in the last week or two when you look at the most recent polls.
How much do you think the controversy with the governor in North Carolina matters to the president's fortune in North Carolina?
It matters when it comes to turnout. I don't think people who were voting for Trump are all of a sudden going to vote for Kamala Harris just because of the scandal involving the lieutenant governor in North Carolina. That's not how this usually works. But if people who are just so dissatisfied with all of politics and then they see the scandal and the hypocrisy and just all the extremism from Mark Robinson, they decide, I'm not only going to support Mark Robinson, I don't even want to show up. I'm so sick of politics. And I think that's a risk, especially if the race is really close. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. But if we're talking about a point or less margin in North Carolina and the race is looking pretty darn close in that state, every little bit matters. I will say, though, that North Carolina fundamentally has been a good state for Republicans. It hasn't voted Democratic since Barack Obama in 2008. Trump won the state both in 2016 and 2020. I don't see a whole lot of evidence suggesting the state maybe some new voters pushing the needle a little bit more to the Democrats, but not significantly so. So So, you know, I still think that North Carolina, when you look at the polls, when you look at the fundamentals, it's still a tilt Republican state, and Trump still has the slight advantage in North Carolina.
So I want you to hear some of these answers. For example, the president was asked, the vice president was asked, what do you say to people that, you know, Republicans that don't want to vote for you or Democrats that don't know you? Cut four.
Well, if you are hardworking, if you have the dreams and the ambitions and the aspirations of what I believe you do, you're in my plan. You know, I have to tell you, I really love and am so energized by what I know to be the spirit and character of the American people.
And I'll tell you, Josh, I'm listening to that and I'm thinking to myself, if I'm a cop and that person I pulled over is talking to me like that, they have to take a breathalyzer. I know she wasn't drinking. But by the way, the windup and the non-direction in all of her answers, trying to figure out what she's going to say, and then ultimately deciding not to say anything, that is too typical.
Yeah, this was I watched the whole interview. It should have a lot. I mean, it was actually a conversation. I mean, I think it was designed as a conversation. And Kamala, and in a way, the fact that the interview was a soft interview hurt Harris because she still stuck to her talking points and these gauzy kind of cliches that didn't really respond to the questions being asked. So it came across, I mean, usually when you do a friendly interview, you're more comfortable. You actually have a conversation with the moderator or the person interviewing you. You see this with Donald Trump all the time. And for some reason, even though this was a pretty easy interview, Harris seemed just as sort of frozen and saying a lot of the same cliches and the talking points. I mean, a very robotic, you know, that was my read out of the interview. But she hasn't really updated these talking points that she's been saying for months and, you know, since the convention. And people, average Americans, see that and it hits them. I mean, they realize that there's not a lot of substance there. Not only is it not a lot of substance, they're just a lot of cliches that don't seem to be very responsive to the questions being asked.
So one of the things people have, and I found this out from talking to a Middle Eastern leader over the weekend, this week, I should say, they said, you know, Joe Biden wasn't getting a lot of attention when he was trying to broker some type of ceasefire. Ever since he announced he's not running again, he gets zero attention and respect. They might take his phone calls, but they're not listening to him. Case in point, I want a 21-day ceasefire in northern Israel. And with Hezbollah, that's not going to happen. Netanyahu is not even paying attention to it. The French are now involved. Here's the president yesterday, cut 32.
He put out a statement for a 21-day ceasefire along the Israeli-Lebanese border. He was able to generate significant support from Europe as well as the Arab nations. It's important to war not widen. I'll have more to say about it tomorrow.
Important the war not widen. What about the objective and why Israel's doing it to begin with? You should start it with, in my view, Israel for the last year has been attacked by Hezbollah unprovoked since October 8th. And they've been forced out. 80,000 people have been forced out of their homes. Israel has little choice than to back up Hezbollah, a fighting group that's taken over Lebanon. So what they're doing now is because Hezbollah would not stop. If you want a ceasefire with an objective to Hezbollah filling out some demands, but instead they just say, let's just have peace. And France says, I just want peace. Is there anyone in North America steeped in reality that understands why Israel's doing this, Josh?
Well, you know the Ronald Reagan line, Brian, peace through strength. That is like what used to be sort of conventional wisdom when it came to national security, even among Democrats, that you need to be, you know, you need to have the threat of force to get peace, to get diplomacy. You can't just beg Hezbollah, which is a terrorist group designated by the Americans and Europe, you know, and has been, sending, as you said, sending bombs since October 7th into Israel. They're not going to listen to begging. They're not going to listen to please, pretty please. Can we cut a deal and pause this for 21 days? They only these terrorist groups only respond to at least the threat of force.
Thank you.
Now Israel has recalled its ground troops. They're trying to, you know, put some of that leverage back in their corner. And even if they don't go in for a ground invasion, they're putting that threat out there. And the U.S. is essentially undermining Israel by saying no, we don't do it. We want to cut a deal at all costs. It doesn't matter what we actually get out of it. And that's the problem. Diplomacy is a useful tool, but it's not a tool that you use all the time when you need to have force backing it up. And a lot of people following, I mean, there's a lot of conventional wisdom thinking in this administration that has failed over the last year, right? And, you know, Harris is, on the politics, Harris has been like frozen on this issue. She hasn't said much, and she has, and again, this is an issue where she's kind of repeated the same line that she said during the convention, even though there's been a lot of changes in the dynamic, both in the South with Hamas and against Hezbollah now. And we've tried to get any comment, even from her campaign, about whether she supports Israel's actions against Hezbollah, and they've been very reticent to even speak about
it.
Makes you wonder. I mean, you're going to be commander in chief if you're elected. This is going to be one of the big national security hotspots, and we're not getting any clarity. And you're seeing this muddled message coming from the Biden White House.
It's because if you don't stand for anything, you're subjected to the news, and that's what we're seeing changing with the news that you think is popular, rather than just telling the people of Michigan, you got a point, but not now. I am firmly in the back of Israel. They were attacked unprovoked, and they have a right to win. They have a right to live in peace. And if you lose some Arab votes, that's the way it is. Because they're not going to run to Trump, because in reality, Trump is even more pro-Israel. Josh, thanks so much. I know you write for the Jewish Insider, too, so you have a real perspective on this. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Coming up next, inside the indictment on a sitting mayor of New York, first time in history, Seth Baron, columnist and author, dominates this scene, best-selling author of New York City Politics. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
As far as I can tell, Eric Adams is working as hard as he can to be the best mayor possible and meet the needs of the residents of New York City. We need Eric Adams to be successful as mayor because he is the mayor at this moment in time. As far as I can tell, Mayor Adams is trying to do the best that he can in one of the toughest jobs in the world to keep the focus on meeting the needs of the residents of the people of New York City.
Hakeem Jeffries trying to figure out how much trouble Mayor Adams is in, waiting on the indictment that they hear is coming down this morning at 6 a.m. Roughly, the FBI raided Gracie Mansion, and we have just gotten the indictment, and it is about 36 pages, and it basically is the United States against Eric Adams. And accuses him essentially of being an unauthorized foreign agent, soliciting funds from another country without registering, using it as campaign funds. In New York, they have matching funds, so therefore it compounds to the tune of maybe $10 million. They date back to 2014 when he was borough president. A guy that knows as much about New York as anyone is Seth Baron, a best-selling author about New York, and he is a columnist and author. Seth, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Brian. It's great to talk to you.
You really know this. Tell me about Eric Adams and how surprised you may or may not be by this indictment.
I'm not surprised at all. I've been sort of saying since he came in that something like this was likely to happen. You can't do what he does, which is flout your connections and your penchant for nightclubbing and all of that, and possibly not paying your tabs. And not attract the attention of prosecutors who are always looking to take down a big head like this. At the same time, so they're going after him for bribery and fraud. But, you know, in the post-McDonnell world, and this was a major Supreme Court case that raised the bar very high on bribery, it's very difficult to prove that a politician accepted a bribe for something that isn't an official act. This is not necessarily an open and shut case.
Interesting. So what we know is they're saying that he, for example, had a deal with Turkey where they donated through different straw donations, contributors, to his campaign. And in turn, one of the things they asked for is, we got a big building. We got the Turkish president coming here. It's not going to have time to get all the FDNY inspections. Now we're looking to cash in. Pass it. Allow it to stand up and move the embassy. And he did.
Yeah, but you know what? Okay, sure. Now, that sounds pretty bad. But now I'm just giving a devil's advocate. I'm not defending
it. I'm fine with that. Be it. Go for it.
Couldn't he say, look, I'm helping out a major partner, helping them to get their embassy expedited? I mean, what's wrong with that? So I'm just saying that it's not clear that it's, you know, that it's necessarily the worst kind of thing. I mean, this could fall within the definition of an official act easily. Please remember, people went to federal prison for bribing Bill de Blasio, the last mayor.
Yeah.
And he didn't get in trouble, because it's one thing to bribe someone, but under this new Supreme Court definition, which passed 9-0, the bribee, the mayor, can be kind of exempt from it. It's a very queer thing. You know, let me also point out, like, Adams is taking a lot of heat from his left. All these people saying, yeah, he must resign. He must resign. He's indicted. You can't serve as mayor. Let me just point out, there's a long history of indicted mayors refusing to step down. Kwame Kirkpatrick from Detroit, Marion Barry from D.C., Sharp James from Newark, Buddy Cianci from Providence. These people were all under serious indictments, and they didn't quit until they were convicted. So I don't think – and Eric Adams is a stubborn guy. I don't see him rolling over, yeah, because some socialists demand it.
So they say Adams received free business class tickets from a Turkish airline to travel overseas. They traveled to other places than Turkey. 2015, Adams, the defendant, involved several people relevant to the events described in the indictment. They got tickets to travel too. So they said, the preliminary said, there were five other countries in which he did some of these deals with. So I haven't seen those five, sure, countries yet. He traveled to Nice, France, Istanbul, Turkey, Colombia, Beijing. Adams accepted business class tickets from the Turkish Airlines to go to all those places, a total of $35,000.
Right. And I have no doubt that he probably did. I mean, that sounds completely consistent with the type of guy he is. The question is, will they be able to prove that it was all a quid pro quo? And if not, what is it that he didn't, maybe he didn't report it correctly? You know, here's another thing. The DOJ has blown a lot of its credibility in the last couple of years.
Yes.
Through its relentless lawfare against Trump. Like, everything that they do now seems politicized and weaponized. So, I mean, everybody kind of agrees that what they did against Trump was pretty partisan. And it helped Trump. So it's not hard to look at the case against Adams and plausibly draw the same conclusion. He angered the White House when he responded, when the migrants were flooding in, and he was saying, we can't deal with this. The feds have to step in and do something. They didn't like that. So that could have prompted, you know, some pressure from above. So, you know, I don't think this is necessarily going to destroy him politically. I mean, we're at the beginning of a long road.
Seth Barron, and there could be more to this, right? I want you to hear, yes, what AOC said, another big celebrity politician, a do-nothing politician, according to Eric Adams, Cup 43.
And frankly, under this constant stream of scandal, I do not know if the city will be able to even name replacements for all of these resignations and vacancies at this point. And so it is a very unfortunate time. We do not want to see this happening in our city, but unfortunately it is.
So that he wants to step aside. He fired back. The indictment was handed down after. And finally, so Seth, you're saying it's going to be a long, drawn-out process. The mayor's going to speak soon. I'm sure it'll be a short address. What do you think he'll say? Specifically, he'll answer these charges, or just look at him still fighting?
I think he'll say he's waiting for the let's have the process, that he's probably saying that these are lies or just a political attack against him. He'll take the defense that you would expect him to take, and he'll say, let's let the process play itself out. You know, this isn't a murder charge. You know, it's like essentially what he'll say is this is a paperwork problem.
You know, Seth Barron, you know what you're going to have? Another chapter in your book about the comeback of Cuomo. It's going to be Mayor Cuomo, and you'll sell more copies and more columns. We'll see. He's going to fight. He's going to speak soon. Seth Barron, thanks so much for not overreacting to the indictment that handed down. We'll see.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Big hour coming your way. Rob Schneider, SNL, 50 years of SNL. Rob played a major role in their success, author of You Can Do It. His book is now out, Speak Your Mind, America. He's become very politically oriented and a great friend of the show. Dan Senor is standing by, former Defense Department official, host of the podcast, Call Me Back, co-author of the New York Times bestseller, The Genius of Israel, The Surprising Resilience of a Divided Nation. And, man, they've come together, and yet they're still divided, but they've come together to fight. We're also watching this major develop, and that's the indictment of a New York City sitting mayor. It is Mayor Adams. He's about to have a press conference. We'll hear from his side of the story. We got the indictment. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but it looks like they don't like his dealings with Turkey, and they say he is an unregistered foreign agent. I'm not sure if it's worthy of a year and a half of taking everyone he knows cell phones, ransacking Gracie Mansion, they said, and they date back to 2014 when he was a borough president. We'll keep looking at that. We'll keep it in New York where Dan Senor is. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, good to be with you.
First off, are you in support and are surprised at the early success of the IDF in Lebanon against Hezbollah?
You know, I'm certainly in support of Israel dealing with Hezbollah. I think it's important to remember that Hezbollah had been in a belligerent posture with Israel long before October 7th. But interestingly, it ramped up dramatically its war fighting against Israel on October 8th. So the day after October 7th, Hezbollah effectively joined Hamas's war against Israel. And of course, this is before Israel had even responded to October 7th. So every possible excuse you could think of for why Hezbollah would do this. A, is there a territorial dispute between Israel and Hezbollah? No. Israel withdrew from the buffer zone in southern Lebanon in 2000. It hasn't been there for over two decades. There's no dispute over territory. Hezbollah is not claiming there's any land in Israel that should be part of a sort of Hezbollah state or caliphate or whatever. They want all of Israel. That actually is the dispute. B, if there was a claim that Hezbollah thought Israel's response to Hamas was too strong, well, that certainly doesn't hold up because Hezbollah started attacking Israel before it even responded to Hamas. At the end of the day, Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. Iran has what they call an annihilation strategy for Israel, and they are trying to effectuate that annihilation strategy by lighting up all these fronts. Hamas in Gaza was one front. Now Hezbollah from the north. There are about five other fronts. And it was just a matter of time before Israel had to confront this. I would have thought they would have done it sooner. I'm glad they are finally doing it. And there are two things to keep in mind. There are 70,000 Israelis that are in northern Israel, or towns, residents of northern Israel, villages, towns, places like Kiryat Shmona and Metula, places I've been to. Those places are ghost towns. Those residents can't live there because of the barrage, the constant
barrage. Status quo doesn't work.
Right. And so they've been gone. And then secondly, as Americans, Brian, Hezbollah and the leaders that Israel has been targeting in Hezbollah have been responsible for many deaths of Americans. They've been on the most wanted lists of the FBI. They've been wanted by the State Department for decades. Go back to terrorist attacks against our Marines and against our diplomats in the early 80s. Look at some of the attacks against American soldiers in more recent post 9/11 wars. Hezbollah has been in the middle of the bloodshed of Americans, and it's taking Israel now to confront that and take these people off the battlefield. So as Americans, we should be incredibly supportive.
Here is Eduardo Silva. All we're talking about is always ceasefire. We just want a ceasefire. Cut 33.
The ceasefire will be for 21 days along the blue line. During those 21 days, the parties, we will negotiate towards a potential resolution of the conflict that has been ongoing since Hezbollah launched the attack on October 8th, and to reach a comprehensive agreement along the blue line that allows for residents to return to their homes in both Lebanon and Israel.
Nobody wants anybody killed. Nobody wants anyone's homes destroyed, especially innocent people. But how is it in Israel's interest for a 21-day pause?
I can't think of a reason it would be. Obviously, the Prime Minister's office has said that it has not accepted any 21-day pause. Even Yair Lapid, who's the leader of the opposition, in Israel, had a security briefing, received a security briefing personally, directly by the prime minister. These men, Lapid and Netanyahu, are bitter, bitter, bitter political opponents of one another. The idea that Lapid would support anything that is in Benjamin Netanyahu's interest or any policy of Benjamin Netanyahu's would, under normal circumstances in conventional times, be surprising. And Lapid has been very supportive of the war that Netanyahu and his government are waging against Hezbollah. And even he came out of that briefing and said, okay, 21 days is ridiculous. He says, maybe 7 days. He says, maybe Israel should consider 7 days. I don't even think Israel should consider 7 days. I don't think the government of Israel is considering 7 days. But it even shows that someone like Lapid, who's considerably to the left of this government, is saying 21 days is crazy. The idea that Israel's just, I mean, it may have Hezbollah here on the ropes. The idea when it has Hezbollah on the ropes, the Hezbollah has genocidal ambitions. Keep in mind, a week ago, Brian, just under a week ago, there was a meeting of the leaders of the Radwan force, which is the most elite fighting force in Hezbollah. There was a meeting of these leaders. Israel took them out, killed, I think, seven of them, rightly so. And they were, according to reports, planning an October 7th-like attack on the in the Upper Galilee, up there in the northern part of Israel, another October 7th, except coming from Israel's north rather than Israel's south. So this is what Israel's dealing with. This is what it's trying to head off. The idea that just when it catches Hezbollah off guard and is performing effectively, Israel would be told to stop. You know, Israel, it's interesting. Israel's the only country in the world that when its enemies start wars against them, their enemies then tell them, we know we started this war, but now we want to stop this war. If you choose to start a war, you don't get to choose when to stop the war. Hezbollah chose to start this war. They do not get to choose when the war ends.
I hear you. And if you look at the arc of Hezbollah, I can't do the whole history, but roughly in the 80s, they emerge and Hezbollah, they basically gradually take over. They have some success against Israel. 2006, Israel goes in, makes some advances, pays some casualties, ends up pulling out. Hezbollah feels its beer muscles, starts putting itself around the world and injecting itself into conflicts, whether it's in Iraq or in Syria. But they're not nearly as effective, and they're making a lot of enemies because they're killing a lot of people, a lot of Muslims along the way. And now they go back in, and people are suffering because of what Hezbollah decided to do. It's not in any – you don't even think about Lebanon as a country anymore thanks to this planter's wart that's grown and,
yeah,
and grown inside them.
It's a cancer. It's a cancer. And Lebanon is effectively a failed state, and the most dominant force within within Lebanon – is Hezbollah. I recorded a podcast on my podcast a couple of days ago, which we'll be releasing early next week, with a guy named Mati Friedman, who's a very prolific and impressive and thoughtful writer from Jerusalem, who served in Lebanon on behalf of the IDF. He's visited Lebanon in the early 90s. He is a tourist, traveled to Beirut. This was a beautiful country. They used to call, you know, Beirut the Paris of the Middle East. The country is now a mess. It's basically a failed state, and that's because Iran has installed Hezbollah there, and Hezbollah is the most powerful force inside Lebanon. So, and I got to tell you, I was meeting yesterday with an Arab official, I won't say his name, but an official from one of the Sunni Arab states, and he basically said, look, many of these countries, many of the people in these countries don't like Israel. They're not crazy about how the Israel-Gaza war has gone. They're all celebrating what Israel is doing to Hezbollah.
Right.
They recognize what a destabilizing force Hezbollah is in the region.
So Dan, right now Netanyahu is coming to the UN at the most controversial time that in all of his years of service, perhaps. What is his message?
I think his message is that Israel cannot be expected to lay down its arms right now while it's finally restoring security on all of its borders. And that the war that Israel is fighting is not just about Israel. It is a war on behalf of civilization against barbarism. And the forces that are trying to wage a genocide against Israel, regardless of which front it is on Israel's borders, these are forces that are threatening what we know of as the West, of, you know, as Western civilization, as, you know, and the idea that Israel can, like, bow down and make peace with these forces
and hope that they won't continue to march not only on Israel, but on countries all over the world is fantasy. It's science fiction.
Dan Senor, our guest. So, Dan, it looks as though Israel's military chief says troops are preparing for a ground war in Lebanon. The U.S. is asking for that not to happen. Israel has not had great success on the ground there, but their leadership now is disabled. We know there's been tremendous damage done to their missile arsenal. Admiral James Stavridis weighed in on a possible ground war, what it would look like. Cut 36.
It would look a lot like 2006. 20 years ago, the Israelis came across that border. The conflict went on for quite a long period of time. It included Israel attempting to hold the ground to the north all the way up to the Litani River. It would be a pretty substantial incursion. That's the bad news. The good news, such as it is, I think it's unlikely it would spread beyond southern Lebanon. I don't see the Iranians coming into the combat. In the end, the Iranians will fight to the last Hezbollahese, if there's such a word, but they are not going to bring their forces actively into this. So if it happens, look for it to be contained in and around that border.
Do you think a ground war is in their interest?
You know, the ground invasion, I consider it with great apprehension. Obviously, there's a lot of risk to Israeli lives with any kind of ground operation, but it may be the only way that Israel can achieve its objectives. I do wonder, and Admiral Stavridis did not reference this, I do wonder at some point, which you're already starting to see early signs of, is whether or not the Lebanese civilian population begins to turn on Hezbollah and basically say, what the hell are you doing to our country? Look at what you have invited. Look what you have provoked. And so the longer this war goes on, I think there's a possibility the Lebanese population gets more involved and becomes more of a threat to Hezbollah, which would be also in everybody's interest.
The Iranian foreign minister weighed in. It says, I explicitly warned the disastrous consequences of Israel's regime ongoing aggression. Israel attacks must cease immediately to avoid unprecedented risk of all-out catastrophe in the region. Israel's supporters and enablers are legal and morally responsible. Essentially goes on to say that Iran will not remain indifferent. We stand with the people of Lebanon and Palestine. So is Iran, do you think Iran wants to get involved here?
I think Iran does not want to get involved. I think Iran, look, what is Israel's response to Hezbollah revealed? It is revealed that Gaza and Hamas Hamas has been a very difficult enemy for Israel to deal with for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is Hamas is basically has operated and built up their capabilities offline, almost analog. They've been very disciplined in the years leading up to October 7th to do a lot of their planning, not electronically. So it was very hard to penetrate. The surveillance of Hamas by Israel was quite light. I do not think that is the case with Hezbollah. I think Israel has extraordinary surveillance and intelligence on Hezbollah. And I think Tehran is learning that the same is true about Israel and Iran. How else would Israel have been able to execute a targeted hit against Ismail Haniyeh right in the heart of Tehran? I think that Israel's intelligence in both places is far superior than Hezbollah or Iran realized, the Iranian regime realized. And so I think the regime in Iran is looking to bring the temperature down quickly because they do not want a big fight right now.
And I'll tell you, Dan Senor, I'm amazed that this administration is totally comfortable with Iran trying to assassinate Trump and some of his former officials. They're not saying a word. They're not threatening. They're not warning. They're just letting it go. Final thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Iran is brazen in its behavior and its actions all over the world. Obviously, we're seeing it in Israel. We're seeing it here. As you said, the attempt at assassination of Trump and has been reported or planning for assassination of Trump. Secretary Pompeo, other officials that served in the Trump administration, they're implicated in this hacking of the Trump campaign. They have a global strategy to wreak havoc. And this administration, no matter who's in power here, I just hope they recognize that we need to be on a heightened alert.
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks so much. Dan Senor, appreciate your insight, and your podcast is great. And it's host of the podcast, Call Me Back. Dan, thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you, Brian. Bye.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, just imagine if Russia had hacked the Harris campaign, if Russian hacked the campaign and then handed out that material to the press and to the Trump campaign, they would be apoplectic. There would be no other story on. There'd be no other story on all these other channels. That's all they would be covering. And they think about maybe not having an election. But if it's Iran on Trump for the 3-4 weeks, still there, still hacking, no big deal. Brian Kilmeade.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We are not surprised. We expected this. This is not surprising to us at all. And I ask to wait and hear our side to this narrative. From here, my attorneys will take care of the case so I can take care of the city. My day-to-day will not change. I will continue to do the job for 8.3 million New Yorkers that I was elected to do.
So that is the mayor of New York City, indicted first time in history. There's been a sitting mayor who's been indicted. It's about 30 pages, mostly revolves around contributions he got from Turkey in exchange for doing favors. One favor that they allege was that he quickly expedited the approval, fire approval of a building that showed the transfer of the embassy and consulate in New York City to a nicer building. And he expedited all the clearances and the inspections. And they said it would never have met those clearances inspections because Erdogan was coming to town. And then he traveled all around on their dime. So that's what's been alleged. He traveled to China, traveled everywhere on these Turkish airlines, and they comped it, and they talked about the people that traveled with him. And he says he's an unregistered foreign agent, therefore he's indicted. I'll tell you, I don't know what to believe. I can just tell you what's happening. This is a long way to go. Taking everybody's phone, massive resignations, massive indictments. All these other people are under different allegations that used to work for him, and he's going to fight it out. So if you are in the Biden administration, and you are actually targeting him because he didn't comply, he spoke out against the administration letting 230,000 illegals pass through the city that we have to take care of and pay for at a cost of a minimum $5.5 billion. Because he complained, this is your punishment? I got news for you. Mayor Adams is going to fight this out, and he might just start calling you out by name. Do you think Harris wants to talk about illegal immigrants destroying cities? Now she's going to have to.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Rob Schneider, author of You Can Do It. The book just came out this week. Speak Your Mind, America, is in studio.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got a ton of tour dates, by the way. He's going to be in Wheeland, California on October 4th. It's next week.
I'm in Atlantic City this weekend.
Oh, Atlantic City this weekend. I'm looking past it. Why was I
Friday
looking past
night,
it?
Friday night, man. Tomorrow
How
night.
How rude is that?
Tomorrow night, man.
The 5th in Laughlin, Nevada. The 12th in Las Vegas.
Thank you.
Yeah. Which is also in Nevada, according to reports. October 18th, St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's hope it's okay with this hurricane.
Yeah, what's
and
left
Fort
of
Peace,
it.
And Fort Pierce, Florida, yeah.
Hopefully
so,
everything's
so
okay.
So it's exciting, but so is the book exciting. It's
Thank
a mix
you.
Of your beliefs in politics, the country, your history, and your comedy. Some people would say that's impossible task, Rob. Why did you take on this titanic task?
First of all, I got into show business to avoid actual work. And this book was actual work, Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Brian, I mean, you had to research stuff, and then you have to look it up, and you have to check it, and you have to confirm it, and then the lawyers look at it. But it was fun because I got to look at some of these old sketches and stuff that I did, and some old jokes, and also just to comment on what I think has been a slide into you know, tyranny in our country and away from free speech, unfettered free speech. So it's nice to kind of look and see what's happened, because it's happened pretty quickly in about, you know, the last 11 years, you know. And so you kind of look at it, and then I've worked with some really good scholars who, you know, whether it was James Lindsay from New Discourses or Roman Brzezniak, and to work on some of the historical stuff in the book. And I think it covers some good ground. And I try to make it funny, you know.
And you do. I mean, from Chris Farley to Norm MacDonald, you have the familiar names.
Yeah,
and the
Norm, yeah.
So, I mean, I'll play some of it. But the one thing that you reminded me of is SNL was something to look forward to. For example, I can't wait for it to start this weekend. But then I realized it's a new era. First off, they would make fun of Kamala Harris the way she did it to Joe Biden.
They will, though. They will. They have to.
Or how about the fact that she stumbles over every ad-lib line, refusing to do interviews? You should have fun.
She
with
talks
that.
Like Christopher Walken. Because Christopher Walken, you never know when he's going to keep talking or stop. And you have Kamala has the same way. To be unburdened, depending on what accent she wants to use, to be unburdened by what has been. And I think she's... She either thinketh too much or can't think at all. And I think that's somewhere in between. But don't make the mistake that she's a dummy. I think she's a Marxist, and I think we have to really call it what it is. I mean, I do feel like this whole idea, and I'm a big Thomas Sowell fan, and the idea that we can all have the same outcomes when we don't have, you know, in society, when we can't even have it in the same family, that seems crazy. I mean, like... And the idea that, you know, how much of your hard work is somebody else's fair share, you know? And that's Marxism. That's communism. And that's what we're dealing with here. We can't not
one,
say that.
It's almost lazy, Rob, to say someone's dumb or smart. You know, it's like, yeah. Really? What do you mean? No one's dumb. Yeah. And we went to this point. She went to law school.
She went
she's
to
an
law
AG,
school.
DA, whatever. But she has no, like, she's no economics background. She's got no history of having a business.
No.
She's got no history of actually doing anything as a senator.
I mean, it's almost like Obama.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But this is what I give Obama.
He never had a job in his whole life.
But, Rob, here's what I give Obama credit for. Before I knew him, it was the number one book in the country, and he was coming and doing a book tour.
I'm not saying he's not brilliant.
No, but so I'm reading this book.
I'm saying he never had a job in his life.
So I'm reading the first 100 pages, and it's a story of he could have got a job in a law firm. He leaves it, and he decides he wants to get into politics. And it's freezing in Chicago and in Illinois, and he's walking in the winter to these churches, and he's getting blown off. We don't know you. We don't know who you are. We never heard that name before. I would have been telling that story every day.
Yeah.
That no one ever gave me anything. I walked out, a single-parent mom. He never told that story unless forced. Which I think would have been inviting to the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this guy had no connections. Dad disappeared, and he still gave up law school to do it. But he never did that. So just in case people think that Rob's overstating this, here's Kamala Harris yesterday talking about dreams. Cut four.
Well, if you are hardworking, if you have the dreams and the ambitions and the aspirations of what I believe you do, you're in my plan. You know, I have to tell you, I really love and am so energized by what I know to be the spirit and character of the American people.
Wow.
That is
just absolute hogwash. She did not have enough coffee or like, you know, the thing is, I don't think people give Trump enough credit because he's getting 3-4 hours sleep. And you could see like she's about getting about the same there. And you could see how she's just winding down. And Trump just keeps going. I mean, Trump.
Well, you just gave her credit. I mean, that's what she talks like, though.
Yeah, she does. She's melting down. That was really a meltdown.
That's one interview.
That was one softball question. You know, the fact that the press is saying she doesn't have to give actual answers. She doesn't need to give answers. That's old school politics where people have to be specific. Who needs answers to... Specific answers to questions.
Rob Schneider. Rob Schneider's here. And by the way, his book, you got to get it. You can do it if you want to laugh and learn a little bit about American free speech. But this is how right you are, Rob. This is why she got the interview. Bill Maher show this past weekend when sitting with Brett Stevens, a conservative who hates Trump. So listen to this exchange.
Kamala Harris is not running for perfect. We have two choices. And so there are some things you might not know her answer to.
I don't think it's a lot to ask her to sit down for a real interview as opposed to a puff piece in which she describes like her feelings of growing up in Oakland with nice lawns.
Then I would just say to that, when you move to Nirvana, give me your real estate broker's number and I'll be your next door neighbor.
You see, that is a perfect example of what this new Democrat, this new illiberal intelligentsia does. They shout you down. They get louder. Remember when Michelle Obama says, "You go low, we go high." What they really meant is, we get louder and we shout you down. And that's exactly what that was there. There was actually nothing stated there except saying that she's imperfect. And we're going after, and I think the rest of that, I think I saw the other clip where she was talking about, again, Trump, the threat to democracy, which also led this kind of dangerous rhetoric leads to people, crazy people, trying to kill people. And they're not stopping doing it. There's nothing that this regime, this Biden-Harris regime, won't do to remain in power. And we're seeing it right now in real time.
Well, I mean, if you want to know yesterday, I mean, if you look at Joe Biden, even yesterday, he was on The View, which I know most of America stopped everything to see, you know, to see the latest. And one was one.
The View. Now there's a.
Have you been on
an objective? I was on with Barbara when it used to be a normal show, when it wasn't a Democratic, a DNC mouthpiece for Democrats.
So I want you to hear Joe Biden. Now, do you know that he's been shot at twice and Iran's trying to kill President Trump? Cut 18.
Trump is.
Careful.
There's not a lot of social redeeming value there. But here's the thing. He really does not believe in democracy and the guardrails that our system has set up for the abuse of power. And look at what he does and what he says. And look what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
look what
he did. On January 6th.
And not on just January 6th was just absolutely bizarre.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
That'll settle things down.
Well, first of all, January 6th, the FBI guided tour, as it's turning into, we're still going to find out what's happening there. Why? You know, we know that now, you know, that the Pelosi didn't allow the National Guard in. It's eventually going to come out. But, again, you have a brain-addled person there who's being brought out embarrassingly, but in the most, you know, not asked one question. They could have asked him, who is really in charge? Who is, you know, when you're not able, when you're taking a nap, who's running the government? I mean, they're not going to ask anything like that. And I think the United States of America deserves to know the answer to who's been really running this government.
So,
and that's not a rude question.
It isn't.
It's like, who's driving my car?
Right.
Who's flying the plane?
Because we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it.
Thank you.
Going at 37,000 feet. And, you know, we're pushing this, the world closer to World War III. I think we should know who's the one actually making the decisions. Because it's not Kamala, and it certainly isn't, you know, Joe, what's left of Joe Biden.
Well, the one thing is, this week in the 50th year of SNL, you write about it a lot in your book. It played such a role in your life. It was a slice of your life as well as a slice of your career when America got a chance to know you. I just thought that compounded with the news this week of Kamala Harris refusing to do the Al Smith dinner, which is a time for self-deprecation. You could put it in teleprompter.
Even she Hillary refuses- Clinton, and after right. that... You know, very, tumultuous and
2016
anger-filled debate. They still showed up.
Do you want to hear Al Smith? Here's Obama Romney, right? They didn't get along. Remember, they made Romney a horrible capitalist that wants to destroy poor people and black people. Listen to this.
Earlier today, I went shopping at some stores in Midtown. I understand Governor Romney went shopping for some stores in Midtown. I've heard some people say, Barack, you're not as young as you used to be. Where's that golden smile? Where's that pep in your step? And I say, settle down, Joe. I'm trying to run a cabinet meeting here. Ultimately, though, tonight's not about the disagreements Governor Romney and I may have. It's what we have in common, beginning with our unusual names. Actually, Mitt is his middle name. I wish I could use my middle name.
As President Obama surveys the Waldorf banquet room with everyone in white tie and finery, you have to wonder what he's thinking. so little time, so much to redistribute.
Right? I mean, tell me that's not fun, right?
Yeah, well, it's also kidding on the square, which is like, you know, really hitting it where it needs to be hit and what everyone's thinking. And unfortunately, you know, we have a real fragile political environment now on the Democrat side because you can't do it. I mean, they've already tried to murder Trump twice already. And so, you know, for Kamala to be so afraid to even have a joke thrown at her, you know, to be the Babylon Bee, and God bless that, Dylan, and him saying, like, Kamala survives another attempted interview. That's pretty good, huh?
That's great. Here's more. Here's a little of Hillary.
Now, I've got to say, there are a lot of friendly faces here in this room, people that I've been privileged to know and to work with. I just want to put you all in a basket of adorables. And you look so good in your tuxes, or as I refer to them, formal pantsuits. And, you know, because this is a friendly dinner for such a great cause, Donald, if at any time you don't like what I'm saying, feel free to stand up and shout wrong while I'm talking.
So they're not supposed to be Rob Schneider. They're supposed to be normal people with funny lines, self-deprecating about things that people have been writing about.
And that was and also what that does is it takes away some of the pressure.
Yeah.
For not just them, but for society. They're all people, and it's like, and so that's what's important, and that's what's going to be missing from this if we unfortunately go down the dark path.
Well, Trump's still going.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to go without her.
Okay, good, good. I think they should have somebody dress up like Kamala.
And I'm not sure the Cardinal would approve that. What about Jim Gaffigan as host? Are you okay with that? He tends to lean left, but I don't think it matters.
He doesn't tend to lean left. He does lean left.
Oh, and sorry.
He also was, you know, at some point, which happens, and I was like right next to Bill Maher when he was having his Trump derangement syndrome for a moment. You know, we're talking about January 6th, the froth and the eyeballs starting, the pupils start to dilate. And Jim Gaffigan had a moment of that during a few years back. And it just, and I would just say people are susceptible to it. All human beings could be susceptible to being brainwashed and to have a moment like that. And Jim Gaffigan did. But, I mean, to his credit, I think he'll be in a better place with it. He's a brilliant comedian.
He is
one of the funniest guys ever. And people are allowed to, you know, to make mistakes or to lose their shit once in a while. And he did with his Trump derangement moment. And I just hope like people like these. He's a human being. God, I mean, Trump doesn't need this. Do you think he needs this? You think he needs to have all this crap? But
he's getting shot at every other week.
Yeah. So I mean, so. But I do think, right. Like, does America hate Trump more than they love their country?
Right.
And that's what this election comes down to.
And the bigger question, will Rob eventually like me better than Adam Sandler? That's the question.
It's
we're
going to
think
close.
About it in the break. It's
getting
very close. Rob Schneider wrote this book. You can do it. He's going to be on One Nation this weekend, primetime Saturday night.
Yeah.
And more Rob Schneider in just a moment.
And looking holistically at the incentive to actually engage in planning in a holistic manner.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
I come here tonight to the Al Smith Dinner knowing that I'm the underdog in these final weeks. But if you know where to look, there are signs of hope. There's signs of hope, even in the most unexpected places, even in this room full of proud Manhattan Democrats. I can't shake that feeling that some people here are pulling for me. I'm delighted to see you here tonight, Hillary.
Who's that? McCain.
Oh.
Right. And then he followed.
Well, that was McCain. Okay.
His punchline was, that's why I was delighted to see you here tonight, Hillary. Because they're still not over that election. Yeah. But that's when Democrats really had primaries. Obama and Hillary had a real primary where you actually had to win states.
Well, I mean, it really changed in 2016 when they just said, well, we're not going to – they never thought Bernie was going to get close. And then they just – and then he actually was winning. And then they said, well, we have these superdelegates. And they just kicked him out.
Right.
And then 4 years later, they did the same thing. And, you know, that's funny because they just had all the other candidates drop out to back Biden, who lost the first two primaries. And it's funny because Macron in France did the same thing the last election. In France, they just had all the – they were going to lose to the right, and they just had all their candidates drop out so that they could, you know, still form a majority. It's the opposite of any form of democracy.
Now he's lost parliament, and he's basically almost a figurehead.
Well, we'll see what happens now. But eventually, you know, people wake up to this. Tyranny does collapse, and it collapses pretty quickly. It stays in there for a while, but then it all collapses very quickly. And then the Democrats did the same thing again this year. You had 14 million people vote for Biden, and then instead of having any semblance of some sort of primary or even if it's after the primary, you could have the delegates kind of some voting process, give us two candidates for the Democrats. Right. And they just said, no, we're just anointing Kamala Harris.
So Rob, you're going to be on Saturday, but does it feel great to have a book on your life out? It's not just a funny book, but it's a book on your life and your career.
I think it's fun. I mean, I didn't realize how much work it was going to be, but I hope people get a laugh out of it and realize I'm not coming from a place of anger. I'm not coming from a place of grievance or vengeful or spitefulness. I love this country, and I do think it's so important to keep up this, you know, freedom of speech. That's what the Beacon Call of Freedom throughout the world is, our freedom of speech. There will be no Marines to save this country. There will be no food drop. There will be no Marshall Plan. We're it.
Right. So I love the way you said that. You can do it. More from Rob Saturday at 9. That's it for this hour of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. And check out Rob in Atlantic City.
Yeah, baby.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.